Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Tuesday, November 8, 2016, Reading City Council meeting. At this time, I would like to call the meeting to order. And tonight, we have the invocation. It was supposed to be Father Derek Thomason, but he's under the weather. But at this time, we have the pleasure of having Deacon Melinda Burrow to do the invocation. And would you please stand up for the Pledge of Allegiance by Councilman Fast.
Paul writes in 1 Timothy chapter 2, I urge then, first of all, that petitions and prayers, intercessions and thanksgiving be made for all people, for kings and all those in authority, that we may live peaceful and quiet lives in all goodness and holiness. This is good and pleases God our Savior, who wants all people to be saved and to come to a knowledge of the truth. Leadership requires two virtues that seem very simple until they become inconvenient: honesty and courage. All of you have earned the right to be here today by winning the trust of the people of Reedley. But along with that honor comes the duty of humility, integrity, and public service. So now let us settle our hearts and bow our heads for a moment of prayer. God of justice and mercy, we thank you for the gift of life and the opportunity to serve the people of Reedley. Help us to act with character and conviction. Help us to listen and understand and with goodwill. Help us to speak with clarity, restraint, and charity. Give us a spirit of service and remind us that we are stewards of your authority. Inspire us to be the leaders that your people need us to be. Help us to see the humanity and dignity of those who disagree with us and to treat all persons, no matter how weak or poor, with reverence your creation deserves. Almighty God, we ask you to send your Holy Spirit of truth upon these entrusted with the care of the common good of the people of Reedley. Give them wisdom, sound judgment, and true love for the people they serve. We ask this through Jesus Christ our Lord. Amen.
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 Thank you. Please join our council in the flag salute. Salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands. One nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, folks. Could we have roll call, please?
Councilmember Beck?
Yes.
Councilmember Betancourt?
Yes.
Councilmember Fast?
Yes.
Councilmember Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mayor Salino?
Yes. Agenda approval, are there any additions or deletions from tonight?
Yes, Mayor. Staff would like to ask the council if they would vote to table item number 11. That's a public hearing. That's an ordinance on the zoning code specifically addressing medical marijuana. Tonight, we're also asking council to vote on item number 12, which is an urgency ordinance. That urgency ordinance will take priority and precedence over every other ordinance in the city covering marijuana, whether it be medical or otherwise. And so the notice for item number 11 was already posted and published. That's why it's on the agenda, but we are asking the council if tonight they will table it, the urgency ordinance again, taking priority and precedence at this time.
Okay. Have a motion to remove.
Mm-hmm. Second.
Moved and a second. Is there any public comment on this item? Seeing none, turn over the council. I'll call for questions, excuse me.
Councilmember Beck?
Yes.
Councilmember Fast?
Yes.
Councilmember Betancourt?
Yes.
Councilmember Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mayor Salino?
Yes. Going into presentations, we have two of them tonight. Item number one is presentation and recognition of Roy Redenberg and Antonio Salinas, recipient of the Public Works Safety Award. I'll call on Public Works Director, Mr. Robinson.
Good evening. On October 28th, the Central San Joaquin Valley Risk Management Association held their board meeting in Selma. Mm-hmm. And at that board meeting, the 2015-2016 Safety Award was presented to two of our City of Reedley employees for their proactive actions as in promoting safety in our workplace. And this is a fairly prestigious award, and I can't begin to tell you how proud I am of the two individuals that work in our water department and their supervisor for their innovative ideas and their commitment to safety, not only for our employees, but for our general public as well. I would like to ask John Arnellis, our water system supervisor, if he would come up, and he's got some pictures to show and provide you some more detail about the fantastic job that these gentlemen did.
Right there, okay. Thank you, Russ, Mayor, City Council, City Manager, and members of the public. Thank you very much for having us here tonight. Just want to, again, congratulate Roy and Antonio. Antonio couldn't make it tonight. He had some family obligations. Excuse me. But Roy is here. Roy, step up, please. This is Roy Rittenberg, the water system operator for your city. Does an excellent job for us. And if I get the picture, this is a picture of a water main replacement we had to do on Parlier Avenue a while back. Excuse me. And you'll notice there's a number of issues going on in this picture. Obviously, there's a few fellows working in there. The ground is opened up. There's a sidewalk nearby, roadway. In this particular job, we had a member of the public, actually quite a few members of the public, walk around the barricades, past the caution tape, over the cones to get to the job site, around some equipment, and walked up on the sidewalk. And we're standing right on the sidewalk and at the on the gutter right there, precariously close to the edge. So the guys on the job stopped. Nobody really took charge on how to extricate the people out of there. So Roy and Antonio came up with a very ingenious idea. They developed this system called, it's very catchy, they wanted to identify risk, identify people for responsible tasks during the project. And the way that they did that, they came up with this TAB system, which is Task Assignment Band. So essentially, the band is assigned before the project and during, and red for traffic, black for job safety, yellow backhoe, and blue for job lead. So the operator that's wearing the yellow for the backhoe spotter, they wear this on their arm, and everybody on the job site knows that's who is in charge of making sure the backhoe is doing what it needs to do, and that people are safe and out of the kill zone. Mm-hmm. The person involved with safety on the job site, they're responsible for handling any members of the public that should wander in. They leave the job, extricate the person out of the job, get them back to the safe zone. The rest of the operators in the job can stay focused on their job, and it makes everything a lot safer. It's been well received by the crew. They've done it and used it a number of times. Mm-hmm. And we got really great response at the RMA meeting when the guys were given the award the other day. So we're very happy with how it's working. Again, very proud of Roy and Antonio, and I would like to represent this award to Roy. Roy and Antonio are just a couple of members of our crew, but they really go above and beyond all the time to make things safe for the rest of us, mm-hmm. to make the job a little more efficient, and never have hesitated to come up with an idea to make things a little bit better. Mm-hmm. Roy is always coming up with new ideas. In fact, we've got a couple we submitted for another award with the American Water Works Association for mm-hmm. a design that we came up with for a chlorine measuring system that doesn't involve any metal or other electronic parts. So it's very easy to make, all off the shelf. Like this, for example, these bands were under $20. They came from a soccer thing for captain. We just turned them inside out. It does what it needs to do. So Roy and Antonio, thank you very much. Would it be possible to get a picture with the mayor, with Roy and his work?
Sure. Please.
Yeah, you gotta go out in the middle.
Up front, okay.
And you gotta stand really tall, so I'm hidden.
Sorry,
you.
Good, thank you.
It's great.
Those are the kind of presentations we love to do. Mm-hmm. At this time, item number two, a presentation, Reedley Middle College High School, Reedley Youth Coalition presentation, Daisy Lopez, MA, Project Director.
Yeah, you'll need to speak at the microphone. Each of you do your speech.
Good afternoon. Thank you so much for allowing us to be here. So I will actually go ahead and introduce Luis Vargas, who's going to be introducing the entire Youth Coalition.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Luis Vargas.
I'm Navneet Sandhu.
I'm Joanna Gallegos.
And I'm David Araujo.
And we are all part of REACT, which stands for Regional Advocates Countering Tobacco, and also here with I Heart You Reedley, a youth coalition, a program of the California Health Collaborative. So today we're going to present you about e-cigarettes, so about the anatomy of the cigarette, what are the major components of the chemicals that are used with it, some concerns, how it's advertised and marketed, and just the consequences of these cigarettes and how it's impacting our community. So Joanna will begin the presentation.
Hi, so I'll be talking about tobacco litter and how it's impacting our community. Each year, billions of pounds of tobacco litters are dumped in public areas where children and families go for their leisure time. Cigarette butts and plastic filters and remnants are left behind, so they're not like the vegetables or other trash that can be decomposable. The most commonly collected waste item found in the parks and beach cleanups. They're the most commons that you'll see. That when you're walking by, you at least find one of them. They're not biodegradable, meaning they're not decomposable. So where does it go? It is discarded in natural environments, such as go to the forest, the woods, the beaches. You'll see them there. And cigarette butts equal 25 to 50% of all collected litter from roads and streets. 5.6 trillion butts are dumped into the global environment annually, which is 1.69 billion pounds. So these butts come with toxic chemicals, and they contain cancer-causing chemicals, pesticides, and nicotine. They are poisonous when they are ingested by humans or animals, and these chemicals can sweep into the water and harm the fishes in there. So some modern problems. Because of e-cigarettes, they've been also causing problems. Deposable hookah pins, batteries from vapes, broken vapes, and liquid cartridges remnants are left behind in public areas as well. So I will be talking about the anatomy of an e-cigarette. So the e-cigarette, there are four main parts. On the back, you'll see the LED light, and then you'll see the battery, and then you'll see this area where the vapor puts the vape in the e-cigarette, and then the battery heats up the vape, and the light on the back will indicate the vapor that the vape is ready to inhale. And so in the front of the e-cigarette, that's where the vapor will inhale the liquid. And there's three main components of an e-cigarette. There's a propylene glycol, vegetable glycerine. There's the flavor and nicotine, which is the addictive part of the of the e-cigarette. So many people have a misconception that the liquid in the e-cigarette is just water, but actually it's aerosol. And aerosol is commonly similar to the component in hairspray. And when you spray hairspray, you'll see that it leaves a residue behind. But when you water, it evaporates and it goes away. And I'm pretty sure no one would want that in their body. So the aerosol also has many health effects. It causes addictive because of the nicotine in it. It causes throat and mouth irritation, lung irritation, and it affects blood vessels just like how regular cigarettes do. And it contains many cancer-causing chemicals. Many people are aware of the secondhand smoking that regular cigarettes cause, but they don't know about what secondhand smoking and thirdhand smoking is from aerosol. So secondhand smoking is the air that the vapor leaves behind, and thirdhand smoking is a residue left behind by the smoker. And so secondhand smoking from aerosol also has health effects just like secondhand smoking from regular cigarettes. They contain 250 toxic chemicals. Over 50 are cancer-causing, and they are at risk of lung cancer, heart disease, asthma, ear infections, and other deadly cancers.
So Navani was talking about the three major components of the e-cigarette. So one of them was e-juice or e-liquid. This is made up of the propylene glycol, all those chemicals. So this e-liquid contains a variety of toxic components. Formaldehyde, for instance, is used to preserve dead bodies. Nicotine is an addictive drug. And all these in red are on California's Prop 65 list of carcinogens and reproductive toxins. So flavor toxicity. The marketing appeals mostly to the youth for and here we have a variety of flavors. So you won't see adults wanting cotton candy or Starbucks or pumpkin spice and all these little strawberry kinds of flavors. It's mostly appealing to the youth. To like teenagers, for example. So e-cigarette refill fluids are greatly in toxicity. Chemicals used to flavor the products are what causes the problem in some people. And there are 7,000 types of unique flavors. So this is some data on the poisonings. So from 2010 to 2014, there has been an exponential increase of poisonings. The green represents the children under 5. So this has affecting like our children. So for example, if somebody leaves an e-cigarette laying around, a minor can grab it and they can be in great danger. Leading to that, we have some cases that have resulted in explosions and people getting injured. One states that exploding e-cigarettes could have killed my dogs, and cats terrified, as a woman says. Also, man loses teeth and part of tongue in electric cigarette explosion. Mm-hmm. And the last one, and the most personal to me, would be 3-year-old boy catches fire when mom's e-cigarette explodes. Mm-hmm. So as a big brother, I have a small sister, and just worrying about the fact that she could grab one and they could explode, or you know, those chemicals could affect her is just such a really bad thing. So yeah.
Due to the technological advancement in e-cigarettes, they vary in appearance and they could also be customizable. E-cigarettes can either be disposable, which is just a one-time use, or rechargeable, which means you could use them more than one time. Now, if you look at these e-cigarettes, they are designed to look like regular cigarettes, but the box it comes in is a charger to recharge them, which means they could be used more than once. These e-cigarettes are decorative, glamorous, modern, and familiar. Now, if you ask yourselves, who would buy a Hello Kitty e-cigarette? Me or the child next to me? See, that is a big issue, is that these are being targeted towards youth. Because I wouldn't see my grandpa going out and buying a superhero e-cigarette. I'd rather see my nephew buying one. Now, they are designed to be camouflaged. You know, they could be in markers, soda cans, and inhalers. So in school, how would a teacher see the difference between a marker or a vape? You know, students just like me, when I read or I think, I usually put a pen in my marker, in my mouth. How is a teacher supposed to tell the difference? Now, a survey was conducted in 2011 and 2012, and it shows the increase of e-cigarette use among students. In 2011, all students equaled 3.3%, middle school 1.4%, high school students 4.7%. Now, in 2012, it was 6.8%, middle school 2.7%, high school students 10%, more than half.
Doubled.
Now, in 2014, teen use of e-cigarettes surpassed use of cigarettes for the first time. E-cigarettes has tripled within high school students. Wow. Now, e-cigarette companies tell, you know, their buyers that it'll help them quit cigarettes, but there has been no scientific evidence that supports their claim. Now, e-cigarette users are a third less likely to quit cigarettes than non-e-cigarette users. And 89 of e-cigarette users are still using e-cigarettes a year later.
So e-cigarettes are found in all types of media, from social media to radios to TV. And the following slides will have examples of ads from e-cigarettes to cigarettes. So before that, the marketing of e-cigarettes has increased a lot. From 2010 to 2013, 70% of 12 to 17-year-olds were exposed to e-cigarette advertising. So you can see millions of dollars spent by these companies. In this ad, we have a picture of a doctor. And doctors are meant to take care of your health and support your medical needs. But here we have the example of cigarettes being good for you. And now that it's banned, there's a new ad, the same message that e-cigarettes will be beneficial for your health. In this ad, we have an example of saying that cigarettes will give you freedom from throat irritation and it will benefit you. And now that cigarettes have been banned, there has been a new ad saying that take back your freedom, take back your right to smoke in public places. This ad shows that if you are to smoke e-cigarettes, then you will look slim, beautiful, like this young lady. And also, this ad shows popping, gleaming light colors that appeal to a more modern and youth audience. And this last slide, this last ad, is showing that now that that cigarettes have been banned 40 years ago, e-cigarettes are a different thing, and it's re-normalizing the fact that it's okay to smoke in public places now. Now, some of the concerns are that these advertisements are specifically targeted toward our youth and young adults, that instead of helping people, it's more of a gateway and starter product. It has become a dual-use product, so instead of not only smoking marijuana, people also use vaping. And it even, as Joanna stated, it lures back tobacco users into smoking again. Also, some other concerns is that it enables smokers to avoid smoking restrictions, because the law states that cigarettes are prohibited in public places, but not e-cigarettes. So therefore, they think it's okay to smoke in public places, even though we don't know what's inside that e-cigarette. It renormalizes smoking, it's false advertising, and does not accurately inform consumers. And one of the most important concerns would be that there has been reported cases that these e-cigarettes has been has people have been using this to smoke heroin, cocaine, marijuana, and even alcohol.
On both October 12th and October 22nd, our coalition participated in the Reedley Trail tobacco litter cleanups, and the results were as following. On October 12th, we collected 2,113 cigarette and cigar butts. On the 21st of October, we collected 765 cigarette and cigar butts, which brings our grand total to 2,878 cigar and cigarette butts. Among those were, among the other things we collected were 102 cigar wrappers, 29 matches, 3 lighters, 1 vape mouthpiece, and 2 cigarette packs. Some observations we made during these cleanups were that the majority of Swisher Sweet wrappers were found near the college and high school parts of the trail. This further proves that Swisher Sweets and other cigarette-related and e-cigarette-related products are targeted more towards the young adults. Most of our litter was found near benches and tables, and the batteries were found throughout the entire trail. So tonight, with the information we have brought to you, we hope we can. We are hoping to ask for you all to consider adding e-cigarette language to the current Reedley Park and Trail ordinances. We hope that we have brought you information that has opened your eyes to what's going on, because although the current ordinances say that the trails and parks are tobacco and drug free, our results unfortunately say otherwise. Thank you for your time. Are there any questions?
Any questions of counsel from these young individuals?
I'd just like to say thank you for coming this evening and explaining this to all of us, because I appreciated your presentation.
Thank you.
Before and now again.
You know, young people have an awful lot in this project here, because sometimes young individuals don't listen to us older folks. It's you folks that have to encourage each other. Mm-hmm. This is not good. So, but we'll do anything we can to help you.
Thank you.
All right? Great.
Thank you for coming and making your presentation. It is an eye-opener. And it's funny, you see it on TV, and it's real glamorous. You know, they show it, and it's not any different than, and worse maybe than cigarettes. No. Something needs to be done, so thank you.
I'd like to say thank you for coming. And I really enjoy that it's the youth that's bringing this forward and not the adults or the school. Mm-hmm. I think it's more important that you speak out, especially for your age of folks, mm-hmm. because peer pressure is a big thing. For you to step up and do this, this is great. Thank you.
Great.
Wow. I had a question for you, and maybe you can answer and maybe you can't, but which was very educational, and by the way, very nice presentation. How much of this is presented to the classrooms, to your knowledge? Is there any, this presentation or any curriculum similar to this being presented throughout the schools right now?
Yes, there's actually presentations that several programs provide to the classrooms and to the parents about e-cigarettes and tobacco and marijuana as well.
Yeah, and that was my follow-up question too. Like, I think it would be good if we could make this similar presentation like to our parent groups. I know that every school has a site council. A lot of our parents, whether want to believe it or not, they don't pay attention to these type of advertisements that are on TV. Sometimes they don't even watch TV.
Mm-hmm.
They're watching a novella or something else. But
yeah.
But I think that this information, you know, the more that we can get it into to our parents, again, they can detect some of these things that you pointed out to us, whether it's markers, whether it's pens, whether it's things that don't look normal that they're carrying in their backpacks or in their shirts and so forth. So,
we've connected with Anita Betancourt, and we've done presentations for her groups.
Our school group, my mothers, and it's been very good. The mothers, it's an eye-opener for them. They've done a marijuana. Every year you've come and made a presentation because we have new mothers that come every year, and it is, it's very good for them. They need to be.
Is that just being done here, though, in the schools in the city, or is that?
It's countywide.
Okay, countywide. Mm-hmm. So
the tobacco
spilling out
program.
To our country schools, whether it be, you know, Navalencha or schools of that nature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we open it up to all the schools in Fresno County for the marijuana prevention program, and then the tobacco program targets all of Fresno County, Tulare County, and Kings County. With the same type of presentations.
Well, I would like to say that all of you that made your piece on the presentation are very knowledgeable and came across very, very effective and, you know, down to earth. So I want to thank you for your presentation this evening.
Right. Thank you, Daisy.
Thank you.
So on behalf of the council, we thank you very much for your presentation tonight.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So I had a question, Mayor, from us. So I know that they requested something for us to consider, and that is adding some verbiage, right, to our ordinances right now, and including, you know, no vapor, not just tobacco, but also the,
So many cities have been revising their language for their tobacco-free parks policies or their city municipal codes to actually include electronic cigarettes as well, so that we can kind of stay ahead of the trends. So right now, as it is written in our city municipal code, we have tobacco-free parks, but they do not include electronic cigarettes. Mm-hmm. So people can still vape in these parks. And like the students mentioned, when somebody vapes, we can't tell if they're vaping nicotine or if they're vaping marijuana or any other drug. So they could potentially be getting high in our parks, and we wouldn't know the difference because it doesn't give off an odor. And I know that we've spoken to our local law enforcement, and they've mentioned as well that there is no way for them to detect what they're using. Mm-hmm. So that's why we've been working with the young people to kind of decide what would be a solution to this. And as a group, we decided that it would be to include the electronic cigarettes into the existing policy.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's great.
And I noticed, too, along our trail, there are no signs that say no smoking at all that I'm aware of. So that might be something we can.
In our parks there,
And the
trail, I believe, is included in our parks ordinance. However, the vaping is an issue. Now, I think our current ordinance says no incendiary devices.
That is correct.
So very, very technically, you could not have an e-cigarette out because there's an incendiary with the battery. But we certainly can clarify. We require a new ordinance change codification public hearing. So there is a bit of a cost involved. However, obviously, there's a cost to public health in not doing something. So,
All right.
I just see with the increase that they're seeing at the young, you know, the young people level, that's going to continue on into their adulthood. And I was very surprised at what I saw when I saw your original presentation.
I do think minimally, and Russ, maybe this is something you can take back to the Parkway Trust, maybe some signs by where we have picnic benches and park trails, smoke-free environment, vape-free. So something we can certainly look at as a first start.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you very much again. As we go on, public comment provides an opportunity for members of the public to address the council on each item of interest to the public within the council jurisdiction, we're not already on the agenda this evening. It's a policy of the council not to answer questions impromptu. Concerns or complaints will be referred to the city manager's office. Speakers to limit their comments to not more than 3 minutes. No more than 10 minutes per issue will be allowed. For items which are on the agenda this evening, members of the public will be provided an opportunity to address the council as each item is brought up for discussion. Is there any public comment at this time from the public? Seeing none, notice to the public. Consent agenda items are considered routine in nature and voted upon as one item. Under the consent agenda category, a recommended course of action for each item is made. Any council member may remove an item from the consent agenda in order to discuss and or change the recommended course of action, and the council can approve the remainder of the consent agenda. A council member's vote in favor of the consent agenda is considered and recorded as a separate affirmative vote in favor of each action listed. Motion in favor of the consent agenda are deemed to include a motion to waive the full reading of any ordinance on the consent agenda. For adoption of ordinance, only those that have received a unanimous vote upon an introduction are considered consent items. Is there any council member who wishes to remove an item?
I'd like to remove 8 and 9, please.
I'll make a motion to approve the agenda items.
Second.
Okay. Been moved and second. Any public comment on this? See none. Call for the question.
Councilmember Betancourt?
Yes.
Councilmember Beck?
Yes.
Councilmember Fast?
Yes.
Councilmember Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mayor Cellino?
Yes. Now we'll go back to item number 8, adopt resolution number 2016-096, amending the fiscal year 2016-2017 adopted budget to appropriate sufficient funds for the removal and replacement of granulated activated carbon media for the water filtration vessels located at water well number 14. Public Works, Mr. Robinson.
Yeah, good evening. Be happy to answer any questions you may have on this item.
I was wondering if you would just share with the public just briefly why we're having to replace these filters early.
Sure. The filtration system, when it was constructed and designed, was designed for the purpose of keeping DBCP out of our water. The filtration system does work a dual purpose of it eliminates DBCP and it also filters out TCP. However, TCP is a more aggressive chemical. And it has started to break through. We thought the filter media would last about 2 years. It's been about a year and a half, and the TCP has already started to break through the media. So because of this, our water is still safe to drink, but it's time that we replace the media to keep the TCP out of our water.
Thank you.
Sure.
Any other questions from council?
So we're doing this, how often would this reoccur?
You know, it appears that it will reoccur every year and a half if operations stay as if this last year and a half was typical. Every year and a half we'll have to replace this media.
So for every year and a half, then we're talking about right about the same ballpark figure of the number of dollars that you're presenting tonight?
About $100,000 every year and a half unless costs go up, correct?
Yeah. So.
And I do want to clarify, the state has not yet set the technical MCL level. That's the maximum contaminant level allowed for a public drinking water system. So things could change where if that TCP breaks through the carbon filtration faster or at a rate that hits the MCL once the state sets it, and they're very close to setting it, things could change. So I wouldn't want to tell the public we're going to do that every 18 months at a certain amount. It could actually be more frequent or less frequent depending on where that MCL gets set.
And with that in mind, whether it's frequent or less frequent, but so we would condition our budget to incur those costs.
Yes, we've already, once the filtration system was installed, we've set aside monies each year because we knew that this media would have to be replaced when needed.
Any other questions? Russ, one question. Now we're talking about the filters that this DCP filters through. Is there any possibility that these filters could be improved in the future?
There is that possibility that technology could come out with a better media for the filters. Mm-hmm. We are putting in the best available technology media, that's available.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Any other questions? Any public comment on this item? See none?
I'll move to approve.
Second.
It's been moved and second. Call for the question.
Councilmember Fast?
Yes.
Councilmember Rodriguez?
Yes.
Councilmember Betancourt?
Yes.
Councilmember Beck?
Yes.
Mayor Cellino?
Yes. Going into item number 9, adopt budget amendment resolution number 2016-099, amending the 2016-2017 adopted budget to appropriate sufficient funds for the Reedley Pioneer Park restroom. Engineer, Mr. Robinson.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Council members, answer any questions on this item.
My question on this item was we're appropriating additional funds, but in fact, this was just funds that were basically needed to finish this off from last year's budget. Is that correct?
Correct. What happened was that the funds were not appropriated for the 16-17 budget, and this is just, they had been previously adopted in the 15-16, they just were not appropriated for 16-17. This is just correcting that.
Okay. Thank you.
One thing, actually, this project came under budget, didn't it?
It came in lower than our estimated cost, which was originally the $334,000 approximately, down to $310,000.
Yay. Okay. It's always good to hear.
Yeah.
Any other questions from council? Any public comment on this item? See none. Turn it back to the council. Do I hear a motion?
I'll second it.
I'm moved and second. Call for the question.
Councilmember Rodriguez?
Yes.
Councilmember Fass?
Yes.
Councilmember Betancourt?
Yes.
Councilmember Beck?
Yes.
Mayor Salino?
Yes. We jump over to number 12. Item number 11 has been deleted. Item 12, consider adoption of ordinance 2016-006, an urgency ordinance of the City Council, City of Reedley, amending the Chapter 11, Title 5 of the Reedley Municipal Code pertaining to the medical and recreational marijuana. Police Chief Garza.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the council, members of the public. I want to start by saying my political opinion does not count in this arena, but however, my concern for public safety should be a factor tonight. And what I am introducing, we're introducing as staff, is an urgency ordinance in the to prohibit the use of medical marijuana and recreational marijuana in public. As you all know, that Prop 64 is on the ballot, and it probably within the next couple hours it will be decided whether Prop 64 will pass or not. And what this urgency ordinance is leaning to do or wanting to do is to, if Prop 64 is passed, this we recommend that a ordinance be resolution be passed along with an ordinance prohibiting the use of recreational marijuana in public. And so what this ordinance will do, it will follow state law, but however, it'll give us an opportunity to govern and to restrict where folks are able to utilize recreational marijuana. And what this ordinance will also do, because currently medical marijuana is allowed, however, to a certain extent. It cannot be used in public, it cannot be, you can't grow it in public, et cetera, et cetera. But what Prop 64 will do will create some ambiguity and some conflict with our medical marijuana, because we were saying that it's legal to do recreational, but it's illegal to do medical marijuana. So what we're wanting to do is to make this the encompassing ordinance for all marijuana within the city of Reedley. By doing this, what we do is we put public safety in, we put public safety at the forefront, because what we are doing is we're telling people you can obviously smoke marijuana. It's legal if it does pass. However, you're not going to do it in public, and you're not going to do it in places where it can impact our youth or other folks. And so again, what this will do is it will reduce the ambiguity and the conflict that is currently that we currently have with our medical marijuana. By approving this, and it requires a 4/5 vote of the council, but approving this will allow this to go into effect immediately, because Prop 64, if passed, will go into effect immediately as well. At 12:01, if it's passed before then, it will go into effect. This ordinance will also go into effect immediately. However, if Prop 64 does not pass, then this ordinance doesn't happen. We can always repeal it and pull it back, and it's like it never happened. So really what I am asking the council to do is to vote in favor of this ordinance so that we can have this urgency ordinance and then bring back to the council at a later date a more in-depth look, and then that way it'll give the opportunity for it to go to the Planning Commission, to go through other parts of our system in order to be vetted and the appropriate action taken at that point. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions, sir?
Just one, I want to make sure I heard that correct. There will be no visible grow either, correct?
That is correct. It will be restricted to indoor. Indoor only.
It says it's a 24 square foot location.
Correct, and up to six plants.
Up to six plants. One question I, in talking to some of the customers I have, you know, talking about this item, and one individual says, you know, can the city adopt a policy? Because if anybody that's over 21 if they qualify for this, can do it. And we'd have abundance of people doing it in the city of Reedley. Is there any way that the city can adopt a policy where if I qualify for that, I have to get a permit from the city? City knows that I have it. Otherwise, the city doesn't know who has it.
Absolutely. And obviously, that would be something that Tony would have to dive into. But that would be something that could be permitted or could be added into our, if that is the decision of the council, to have that added. That is something that we can look into.
Person, if I knew that the city knew I had that, I think I'd be a little more concerned of how I handle that marijuana.
Mm-hmm. So this is an interesting issue that cities are talking about right now as to whether or not they want to put in place permitting systems for these 6 plants per residential unit. Okay. And I want to be clear with the public, it's 6 plants per residential unit, not 6 plants per person. So that's okay. A very important qualifier in this ballot right. language. The proposition gives every city the ability to put in place a permitting system, and how robust that permitting system is up to the local government. So for instance, in Reedley, we could put in place a system where somebody comes in, they pay a fee, they get a permit to have their 6 plants, and that's it. We keep the log of who has it and who doesn't. Hmm. We could put something in more robust that regulates the types of ventilation systems, the types of lighting, which rooms they can be, very, very robust if we wished. The concern for small cities in going that robust with a permitting system is that we would have to hire new staff to inspect and validate, and it just would become a horrendous challenge to us. Now, the benefit of having some sort of permit system, even a rudimentary permit system, is that if we were to enter into a home for a purpose and see somebody had plants, or we knew about somebody having plants in their home, they didn't have a permit, we would have the option to go in and issue an administrative citation. Illegal fireworks, for instance, that citation is $1,000. So there's a very real incentive for somebody to come in and get a permit so that they aren't cited. So these are items that the council certainly can consider, a permit system and how much they want to regulate through that permit system, and then the citation and how much we might want to do with that. So Scott, would we need to bring back the urgency ordinance to address those two issues, or is that something council can add to it tonight?
No, the urgency ordinance right now would just, it contains the regulations, kind of the interim regulations. If your desire is to put in place some sort of permitting system, then we can bring that back as part of the permanent ordinance that the chief did. This urgency ordinance, again, is designed to be in place only for about 45 days. It can be extended if necessary, but it goes into effect immediately, unlike a normal ordinance where, you know, it's not effective for 30 days. But the urgency ordinance gives us time to get regulations in place. You're regulating where people can cultivate
right.
marijuana. They can't cultivate in their front yard or in their backyard or out in the open. It's got to be inside, right. confined to 24 square feet, as you mentioned. There are regulations for certain lighting limitations, ventilating requirements, things like that. But there is no defined permit process or inspection process in this interim ordinance. But if that's something that you do desire, we can certainly put that in the permanent ordinance that will go through the normal process
okay.
and have more of a public input involved, as well as the Planning Commission would weigh in as well.
So that would be up to council if they wish to do it that way.
Mm-hmm. Mayor, I have
another question.
Mm-hmm.
This refers a lot to the medical marijuana side, which is actually already law. So are we going to allow cultivating for the regular person that doesn't have a medical marijuana card?
That's correct. If Prop 64 does pass, that means anyone over the age of 21 will be able to.
Mm-hmm. And that's kind of, and if I may, that's where we're at now. You're correct that the state of California has decriminalized medical marijuana. However, it's left it to local jurisdictions like mm-hmm. the cities mm-hmm. to ban mm-hmm. it. And your council recently, just earlier this year, did mm-hmm. a complete ban on medical mm-hmm. marijuana cultivation. So even if you're authorized or you're a qualified patient that can use medical marijuana, you're prohibited by the city's current zoning ordinance from cultivating it in the city of Reedley. Mm-hmm. You can obtain it elsewhere and bring it in, and there are regulations in the city that restrict on where you can consume the medical marijuana. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of an interesting mm-hmm. dichotomy that mm-hmm. we have here. So currently the city of Reedley bans medical marijuana cultivation. But if Prop 64 passes, then recreational marijuana could be cultivated. Right. So again, Prop 64 doesn't address medical marijuana. So you would have, in one instance, recreational use marijuana could be cultivated. So you could go into the home and someone would say, well, I'm not cultivating this for medical purposes. I'm cultivating it for recreational purposes. And that would be legal. So what this urgency ordinance does, it actually removes the current ban on medical marijuana cultivation. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So any marijuana could be cultivated in the city of Reedley once this urgency ordinance is in place. Again, assuming Prop 64 passes. So if Prop 64 passes, this urgency ordinance, if you approve it tonight, would basically immediately go into effect. Mm-hmm. But if even if you approve this urgency ordinance tonight, if for some reason Prop 64 doesn't pass, then this urgency ordinance never goes into effect. We have the current regulations that ban medical marijuana cultivation, and then recreational use marijuana wouldn't be the law if 64 doesn't pass.
You know, you hate to, there's certain people that have medical problems that doctors approve this medical marijuana. And I understand that. And it's just like that fella in Madeira, just recently in the paper. He has a medical problem with his liver inherited by his mother. Doctor, he couldn't take any pain pills, so the doctor says you can use medical marijuana, all right? So he goes and tells his employers about it. So what happens? He gets fired. Mm-hmm. So I think this is going to create some problems with certain employees, mm-hmm. certain businesses. So we're looking at something that's it's going to affect this community in certain ways. Mm-hmm. So. But if it passes, we just have to handle it the best way we can.
Yeah, I'm looking at on the, our page 6 of this, and it talks about property owner authorizations for rental properties that the person who rents has to request from the property owner to cultivate their marijuana. And that's another thing, you know, I could see problems with landlords not wanting to allow that in their properties. Mm-hmm. And where do we go with that then too? Furthermore, I know in my experience with rental properties, if somebody's doing something they're not supposed to, they're surely not going to tell me. So I'm just wondering if, you know, if we say, okay, you have to come down here and you have to fill out all these papers and you have to pay probably $100 to $200 for a license or a fee to be able to have a card to say you're authorized to do marijuana in your, you know, in your house. I don't think they're going to come myself. I don't know quite how our staff is going to try to be policemen on that.
It's going to be virtually impossible, and up and down the state, all communities are going to experience the same problem. The mayor just brought up a really interesting point, by the way, and that is employees. It will still remain a disciplinary issue if employees come to work high or if they are smoking marijuana on the job, and it still remains an issue of extreme discipline for police officers because it is still against federal law, and police officers must follow all state and federal laws. So for employees, I'm sure there are no city employees who are thinking about doing this, but if employees are going to be showing up with marijuana on them because it's now legalized, they will be disciplined. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, I think tonight what we're dealing with just one item. As time goes on, I think we'll deal with other things too, especially your department.
Yeah,
so. It's kind of sad. You have children at home and teenagers at home, and you're just exposing them to all of that.
I had a question, Chief.
Yes, sir.
When we talk about restrictions, is that going to include, like, when individuals are, say, because you talked about smoking it in public. So is that going to, the public, will that include individuals smoking marijuana, say, in their front yard?
Absolutely. It cannot be in anywhere in public view.
So if they smoked it in their backyard, it's
then
okay?
Then they're okay, as long as it's not in the public view or anywhere where the public can get to. So if they say, oh, I'm going to be in my backyard, mm-hmm. and it's not enclosed, mm-hmm. then it's technically in public view.
Well, I think, you know, I just think we're going to have some tremendous challenges, and I think Ms. Bencourt just pointed it out. To me, it could be for the right purpose, for the right reason. An individual would be, you know, having their medical marijuana in their home. The challenge or the issue that I have with that is that there's other people that have access to it. Mm-hmm. You know, from fifth, sixth graders to junior high, all the way to high school. Secondly, is that because a person has a medical marijuana permit or whatever, and then he invites people over. So now, you know, how do we monitor that? And we go in there and we sit, and then they flash the card. Hey, you know, what can you do?
Well, the interesting part is that no card is required as long as they're 21. Mm-hmm. They can possess it.
Yeah, I just think that we're going down a very, very dark rabbit hole on this thing. It's going to put some tremendous, you know, pressure on families, mm-hmm. tremendous pressure on kids, like we heard tonight, mm-hmm. you know, the peer pressure and so forth. Mm-hmm. Tremendous strain, you know, on our police department and other folks. And, you know, it's real sad, you know, that our state, needless to say, there's already other states that have this in place. And talking to Nicole the other day, but the we're even entertaining this, and the country's going in that direction as a whole. It's just, for the lack of a better word, just ludicrous to me. I mean, we have enough problems with alcohol. And now, you know, most likely, I mean, if we keep up with the news today, it looks like this thing's going to pass. Mm-hmm. You know, the percentages are pointed in that way.
I still have my fingers crossed? Absolutely. I still have them crossed.
And I've listened to council too this evening, as far as I think the mayor brought up a good recommendation or suggestion, but again, you know, cautioning ourselves is like, how much can we put into an ordinance? Because we have ordinances right now that we don't have sufficient manpower to even enforce that. So things of we're just going to have to examine that real closely and not put ourselves behind the eight ball, because then we're saying something but not being able to monitor effectively, mm-hmm. not being able to police it efficiently. And so then it becomes like, you can have all you want, but you know, we know that you just don't have the manpower to regulate this. So I think that's going to be the conundrum for us. Mm-hmm. We need to look at that.
You know, Chief, one of the things that I'm concerned about is your dispatchers are going to be bombarded by residents that don't have the marijuana, but their neighbors do. Mm-hmm. They can smell it. Mm-hmm. First thing they're going to do, they're going to call your department.
And what control does a parent have? Because we've been educating our parents, on the health hazards. It's bad for you, your health. And then if their kids, you know, bring it home, and what do? I mean, they can't call you. I mean, they can right. call you, but then if it's legal, then, yeah, it's...
It does create, it creates a lot of challenges for law enforcement, because, you know, in order to police this, we're going to have to become very innovative in the way that we do it, you know, because it does have an impact not only on the person who is ingesting the marijuana, but everyone, like Daisy's group had talked about, all the secondhand smoke, mm-hmm. you know, and you have kids around and stuff. Now are you talking about, a child endangerment at that point? Mm-hmm. There's just a lot of things a lot of unforeseen issues that are going to be caused, you know. But, you know, unfortunately, this may be something that we just have to deal with and figure out what's the best route. You know, it's the unfortunate side of this.
Right. Any other council questions? Seeing none. Any public comment on this item? Seeing none, what is the council wishes?
So moved. Second.
It's been moved and second. Call for the question.
Councilmember Rodriguez?
Yes.
Councilmember Beck?
Yes.
Councilmember Betancourt?
Yes.
Councilmember Bass?
Yes.
Mayor Salino?
Yes. Going to item number 13, introduction and waive first reading of ordinance 2016-004, adoption of 2016 California Building Standards Code, and schedule public hearing to consider adoption of ordinance number 2016-004, and building and fire, gentlemen.
Good evening, Council, Mr. Mayor. This is basically a routine administrative item that we revisit every 3 years. The last time was in December of 2013. On July 1st of this year, the state of California adopted the new Title 24 California Codes and Regulations, otherwise known as the Building Codes. And from July 1st to January 1st, the council has the discretion to adopt the amendment or adopt the codes as they are or make amendments. So amendments can be made to the state code as long as the building standards are increased or are stricter than the minimum level of standards in the code. So we do have several local amendments, and these are being carried over from the previous code cycles, and I'll just go through them briefly. One of those is the automatic sprinkler amendment, whereas it changes the code here locally requiring automatic fire sprinkler suppression systems in buildings that are 5,000 square feet or larger. The state code requires this for buildings 12,000 square feet and larger. So as you go through the ordinance, you'll see a couple of exhibits, one and two, which is primarily climatic data. And what this is information that will satisfy the findings and conditions that are necessary to support and justify the code amendment for the automatic fire sprinkler systems. In other words, we're saying it's hot here. Summertime temperatures are conducive to rapid spread of fire when we do get it, and it puts our firefighters at risk when they're working in these types of temperatures. So the ordinance specifying a lower threshold for automatic sprinkler system helps us contain fire spread and helps our firefighters work effectively and safely. The automatic sprinkler amendment has been in effect for at least four code cycles that I'm aware of. I'm not sure if it was here prior to that. Amendments, there's also some amendments in the building code section in regards to the appeals board. And currently the state code states that local jurisdictions may establish a local appeal board, and members of the appeals board would not be employees of the enforcing agency. So what is proposed as an amendment is that the appeal would state that the city shall establish an appeals board, which shall be the governing body of the city, which are you folks. So it gives us control of that appeals board process. Another amendment was adding section 2810 to chapter 28 of the California Fire Code, which addresses the storage of combustible idle pallets. Here again, this is an amendment that was carried over from two previous code cycles due to some high piled pallet storage areas we have in our city. Recently, last July, there was a extremely large pallet fire in the city of Los Angeles, and I believe it burned down six buildings. Pallet yard fires are very hot because the pallets are not solid and they allow air to burn through, and they're probably one of the most dangerous fires that a fire department can experience. And the city of Los Angeles had 180 firefighters trying to defend that fire. And we've had some here locally, even in our county, within the last 5 or 6 years. And again, all of these amendments are being carried over from our previous code adoption cycle. So there's nothing new here. And that concludes my report. And staff recommends that the council approve the introduction and waive the first reading of ordinance 2016-004, adopting the subject codes and schedule a public hearing on December 13th, 2016 to consider adoption of the ordinance. I can answer any questions you might have.
Any council questions on this item?
Mayor, I have a question.
Yes.
Going back to the automatic sprinklers,
mm-hmm.
you said that the state law is 12,000 square feet.
Yes.
The building has to be that big before. Why did we decrease it to that small of an amount? That's about the size of a large home.
Well, that was determined prior to me being here, but maybe building official has some history, I don't know, but it makes the code more restrictive and it makes protection higher in our community. When you provide fire suppression for a smaller size building, it just means that we have a better chance of getting that fire put out.
I would be interested to know what the cost would be, the difference of the two.
Gary, do you have any thoughts on that? You've seen that, right?
Sorry, I'm asking these. I don't know what the cost difference would be.
We've had no objection to it. I'll say that in the 10 years that I've been here.
Sorry to put you on the spot, Gary.
I didn't realize that the state code was that much different.
Yeah, I don't have any estimates on what the cost of a sprinkler system would be in a 5,000 square foot building versus a 12,000. The code now requires sprinklers in some commercial buildings regardless of the size.
Mm-hmm.
And by us keeping our 5,000 square foot requirement in there, it suppresses a fire a lot quicker. A lot of jurisdictions use the 5,000 square foot. I know there was some research reports done on that, and that was what was considered a good average for smaller jurisdictions, especially really with the volunteer fire department. And so it's the cost is fairly minimal because all residences, all apartments, everything now, the code has automatically required fire sprinkler systems. And so this is just another step to keep Reedley in the loop to where we're going with the trend of the building codes. It's more and more fire suppression systems.
You know, okay. it's a good point, and I guess I should point out that it does help us keep our ISO rating fairly low, which I think is a 4 right now.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So one of the things, as your ISO rating goes higher towards 10, which is the highest, your homeowner's insurance and building insurance rates go up.
Sure.
So
I know that. So a residence now, if we were to build a new residence, all new residents have fire sprinklers.
Yes, for this is the second cold or the third cold cycle that requires single family dwellings that all new construction to have fire sprinkler systems.
No matter the size.
No matter the size, right.
Okay, so these group A, B, E, F, I, M, S, and U,
commercial.
And H5, those are all commercial buildings?
Those are all commercial buildings, yes.
Okay. Well, I just know that fire sprinklers in a home or in a facility are very expensive, and I would think that the difference of 5,000 square feet versus 12 would make a lot of difference in a price of a new dwelling or new, you know, building. We're trying to get people to come to our city and do business, and yeah, that's a concern that I have.
Gary, Chief, this is the third cycle you're saying we're doing this. So I guess what interests me is that the data that we collect and taking a look as we have more apartments or more commercial buildings or more single family dwellings that are required, you know, with the installation of the sprinkler system, what our data is going to show, you know, down the road as when we're talking about safety and we're talking about being able to suppress a fire, you know, rapidly versus when our community wasn't designed like that.
Right. Initial studies by the NFPA, National Fire Protection Association, indicate a 50 to 70% better chance of saving the building and the contents.
And then so, I know we talked, someone mentioned right now, a few minutes ago, the insurance, the cost of insurance, but so some of the dwellings that we have here, well, my dwelling, I don't have sprinklers. I mean, but that's like a 20-year old neighborhood now. So say if a developer comes in and they do that, say 40 homes or what have you, those would be a requirement, you install it. So are those homeowners, you know, getting that much of a savings with, you know, with their insurance?
That I don't know. On an individual basis, I'm not too sure.
I'm pretty sure that there is a, you know, with the ISO insurance rating and in the insurance industry, if you come in with a sprinklered home to get your homeowner's insurance, your fire insurance, you're getting a lower rate than a 20-year-old house that doesn't have sprinklers.
And then the difference between, let's just say we have a factory or we have a small business, 12,000. Mm-hmm. Are they required, whether it's an old building or a new building? I just, for my knowledge, is that something that would be required? Is that in our code? Is that maybe their insurance requiring that? Like, you know, here you have, let's just say we had a 12,000 square foot welding facility. Mm-hmm. Are they required to have that regardless of the age of the building?
Code adoption here is for all new construction. However, when you have an old building that changes occupancy, for instance, if it was just a mini market store, for example, and it changes to a furniture store, the code now requires sprinkler systems in all furniture stores, regardless of the square footage. So an old building there could be a scenario where an old building would be required to install sprinkler systems depending on what the occupancy that they're proposing to change to.
So given that example that you just pointed out, so if I came to the city and I want to convert that, it was selling a certain product, of whether food or what have you, or and now I want to convert it, like you said, to a furniture store, that's gonna be part of the information that I would be getting when I come to the city, vesting an interest in establishing my business.
Yes, that's correct.
Right up front. It's not mm-hmm. going to be like, okay, now you got to do this.
Yeah.
See, if I'm gonna jump in, what I'm saying is, I'm gonna jump into it. I'm gonna invest. I want to know what the costs are fixed to that, right? So I would know that mm-hmm. up front.
Yeah. No matter which way you would go in that scenario, if you went to an architect and said, okay, we're purchasing this building, what can we do with it? This is what we want to do. Architect would also give you all the information to all the code upgrades that would have to be done, as well as city staff.
And Scott just leaned over to me and said, we're absolutely not unique. Fowler, Sanger, Selma, we all have the same building code requirements as sprinklering requirements. So.
Okay.
All
right.
Mr. Mayor?
No, I was just going to... If I remember correctly, I looked at the new homes being built out on Frankwood mm-hmm. and Hubert area.
Yeah.
Those have sprinkler systems in them.
Yes.
But did I see plastic lines running to those?
Yes, you did.
And that was going to be my next question. If we're putting plastic lines in, are they heat resistant? Because I would think your sprinkler system would almost need to be metal. Line
in the larger commercial buildings it is, but there's several approved plastic pipe systems for sprinkler systems. Keep in mind the plastic pipe is in the attic, it's surrounded by insulation, the sprinkler head is below the ceiling, fire starts in the room, it never gets to the piping.
Hope
in the
don't
attic
start
hopefully
the attic first,
huh? Mm-hmm.
No, my question actually was going kind of an idea. Did you ever get an opportunity to find out what the additional cost to that residence, like that's, we're probably looking at 1,800, 2,000 square foot?
No.
At that location? So no, I was curious what the cost maybe was the addition to that.
Yeah, no, I've never looked into the cost. I've heard a lot of wild estimates, and then I've heard some more realistic things, but you know, I don't want to throw numbers out there because I just don't have that information.
Yeah. No, that's what I was curious. I thought since we had it already starting to be used in the city that maybe you had had some information on at least the residential size. So
yeah, no, I don't have that one. So,
okay,
yeah.
Thank you, Gary.
Okay.
Any other questions? Seeing none. Is there any public comment on this item? Do I hear a motion?
So move.
Been moved.
Second.
Been moved and second. Call for the question.
Councilmember Rodriguez.
Yes.
Councilmember Beck.
Yes.
Councilmember Betancourt.
Yes.
Councilmember Fass.
Yes.
Mayor Salini.
Yes. Going into item number 14, adoption of documents pertaining to the unrepresented employee compensation and benefits. There's two resolutions, and I'll just turn over to Finance Administrative Services, Mr. Guadalajara.
Okay, Mayor, Member of City Council, Gary Guadalajara, Director of Finance Administrative Services. The item before you revises the master salary table and the salary and benefits schedule for unrepresented and part-time employees. This item has several components. I'm going to briefly go over those pieces. The first one is the reclassification of five positions with a 5% increase. This is to address to make sure that our salaries are competitive with our peer cities. Those positions include the accounting manager, roads and grounds supervisor, solid waste supervisor, water system supervisor, and wastewater supervisor. This will result in a $4,000 increase in salaries, which was budgeted for the last half of fiscal year 2017. There will be no additional appropriations needed to fund this increase. The next item is a cost of living increase of 2.5% for unrepresented employees. This will result in a $39,000 increase over 13 funds, and the effect to the general fund will be $15,800. This was also budgeted for the second half of FY 2017. And this also requires no additional appropriations to fund this increase. This item also includes a staff assistant position to be funded on January 1st, and this item also revises the part-time salary table to be updated with current position titles as well as changes in the California minimum wage law. In the salary benefits schedule, there were certain items that were inadvertently left off, so this will correct those errors and omissions. First is the half day off on Christmas Eve and the Martin Luther King holiday. This item reestablishes both of those, as well as two positions. One is the senior management analyst and the associate planner. And finally, changes to FLSA status for the senior engineering assistant from non-exempt to FLSA exempt, and the recreation coordinator from exempt to FLSA non-exempt per the federal overtime regulations presented to council on October 11th of this year. That concludes my presentation, and I'm available for questions.
Okay, we have two resolutions. Scott, can we take these one at a time or both of them?
Yeah, I would suggest do one at a time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Item number A is resolution number 2016-097, revising the master salary table for unrepresented and part-time employees. Council, any questions from council?
I had a question. You said that you added a staff assistant position?
Yes. That was added to the master salary table.
Are we adding another staff person in that position then? Or is that just a new?
We are establishing the position on the salary table, and the position is funded starting January 1st.
So the position was in the adopted budget.
Okay.
So it's just being added to the master salary table starting January 1st.
Okay, and who's the staff assistant to?
That is for the Public Works Department.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other council questions on item A? Seeing none. Public comment on this item? See none? Turn back to the council for the wishes.
Make a motion to approve.
Right.
Second.
Been moved in second. Call for the question.
Councilmember Fass?
Yes.
Councilmember Betancourt?
Yes.
Councilmember Beck?
Yes.
Councilmember Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mayor Cellino?
Yes. Going into item B, resolution number 2016-098, revising the salary and benefit schedule for the management confidential and professional slash technical employees, aka unrepresented employees. Again, Mr. Wadahara.
Oh, I think I did it twice. I added it. I did that one. At the
it's
same
okay.
Time.
Yeah,
I'll
think
just,
it's.
I'll just ask council for any questions on this one. Okay. Sorry.
Okay, so the cost of living increase goes into effect January 1st, right?
Yes.
But this resolution that we're doing, the one that we just did, goes into effect December 1st.
The FLSA changes do go into effect December 1st. And actually, for the salary and benefit schedule, everything on this item can go into effect immediately because we do need to just reestablish the half day off Christmas, the Martin Luther King holiday, as well as the two positions that were left off, which is the senior management analyst and associate planner.
Okay, so those go into effect December 1st?
I believe those would go into
the
effect.
The FLSA status goes into effect December 1st. Anything having to do with COLAs or the increases of the 5% readjustments, that is all taking place January 1st
right.
And was budgeted only for January 1st through June and not December.
Okay.
So the FLSA, the holiday clarifications
correct.
Go into effect. Essentially, you could say immediately.
Well,
but,
yeah. But Christmas and Martin Luther King are a few weeks away. So,
right.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
That was going to be my only question, was that the budgeted amount for the monies was set for January 1st. So
correct.
That was what I was saying.
Correct, yeah.
Any other council questions? See none. Any public comment on this one? See none. Turn it back to the council.
Motion.
Been moved. Is there a second?
Second.
Been moved and second. Call for the question.
Councilmember Beck?
Yes.
Councilmember Betancourt?
Yes.
Councilmember Fass?
Yes.
Councilmember Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mayor Cellino?
Yes. At this time, we'd like to go into council reports, and I'll start with Mr. Rodriguez.
A few things here. An opportunity to attend the ribbon cutting for the Burns Redeker insurance. Progressive Insurance. Also attended the ribbon cutting for the new store downtown, the Sweet Destinations. Very well attended by the community, and interesting, it's more than kind of like a co-op right there. It's not just selling candy, but some other items and so forth. But it was highlighted in the news that, you know, that weekend, and even on Sunday they covered it again. Also, the ribbon cutting for the transportation center, very well attended, and it's very insightful as far as some of the things that the superintendent had mentioned. Having the electric bus first, not only in the nation but in the world, I'm just quoting what he said.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so
that's true.
I thought that was pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Also. Had the opportunity to finally attend a Reilly College game about a week and a half ago, and that was their first victory. I was there for that one, so it was exciting. And I think their last game is probably this coming weekend. They play here at home. And then the last event that I attended was the police the awards, annual awards program that we have. Very nice breakfast, very well structured, and. I had the pleasure of having a long conversation with one of our officers, Officer Rivera. Very holds himself very well, and I think that, in my mind, this is just me, and I think that's if that's a model that we want to see as far as for community interaction and relationships, I think he's doing a phenomenal job. So please extend that to him, Chief, and I would appreciate it. That's all I have.
Okay. Councilmember Fast?
I attended a breakfast for Devin Nunes the end of October, and also attended the ribbon cuttings for the Burns and Whitaker, the Transportation Center for Kings Canyon Unified, and the Sweet Destinations. And Brad and I helped with the Reed Lee Mennonite Brethren Church, the Family Fun Night, and I appreciate the fire and police, and a bunch of explorers were there, and also Sequoia Safety came and helped out. That was nice. The kids always appreciate that. Also attended the Fresno State event with President Castro regarding the Central Valley Promise. And I don't know how many of you are aware of that, but it's an opportunity for high school students to at least get their first semester of college for free if they follow the structure that's in the Promise. So if that's something that interests you, you have students that are in high school that are going to be attending college, that'd be at Reedley College or at Fresno State. So just something to keep your ears open for if somebody comes along that might be able to qualify for that. Also attended the Emmanuel High School auction and dinner, and that is one of their major fundraisers for the year. They also raised about $190,000 for scholarships for students to go to school there. So it was a plus other monies that were raised in the auction itself, but cash of $190,000. I thought that was pretty remarkable. And always a pleasure to go to the police awards morning event. It's amazing what our little town of Reedley gets involved in. I remember when Brad came on the fire department and he brought home a scanner. It's like, oh my goodness, I didn't think Reedley had any problems. Well, I found out different. So it's neat to encourage our officers and try to get them to, you know, shoot straighter in their practice and do better in their work. And it's fun to hear the stories. Appreciate that. That's all I had.
Okay. Councilman Beck?
Attended COG this last month at the end. Just a little update. You're all aware that we got the money back into the funds for the 180 extension. Well, that goes out to bid this December. So that's back on the blocks and working. Transportation-oriented development funds. That is out of Measure C. Only Fresno for the last 5 years have had availability of those funds. We made them. We are able now to also to apply projects and see if we can get money from that same funding. It's no longer going to be just for Fresno. It's going to be for all the cities within COG. So I think that's going to be important because it'll help us maybe with some of our local transport or public transportation programs. Also attended the CVTC opening. Great show of people there. And it's that's a beautiful complex out there. So I did attend the ribbon cutting at Sweet Destinations, but I had to fight Rick for the chocolate. that's a great store down there, and it's going to be. I think you've got a good group of people. It's a catalyst. I was back in there a few days later, and it was just a constant run of people in and out. So there, it's going to be, I think, a real good addition downtown. So, and that's all I have.
Mayor Pro Tem Bencourt.
Well, I just want to say thank you for that policeman award and breakfast. It's very, very nice, and it's nice to see their families there and get to see their kids, and it's just a very good environment, and I really enjoy it. Thank you very much for that.
Okay. I also attended the transportation yard ribbon cutting, and that was pretty impressive. Great turnout, and years to come, maybe I'm not going to be around, but I'd like to see what this city yard is going to look like eventually. So looking forward to that. Also attended with the city manager, the GSA Water Agency at the Alta Irrigation District office, and I'm going to let her talk about that on the staff report. So that's all I have. Staff reports?
Well, let me start with that one. Thank you, Mayor. The Groundwater Sustainability Agency, this was the legislatively created GSA through SB 37 that VIDAC held for us. We are looking to get that up and have its first board meeting in January. So this is the City of Reedley, Dinuba, and Orange Cove, and then about 14 other players that include irrigation districts, public utility districts like Cutler or Rossi, everything pretty much on the east side of the Kings River, although all of Reedley is included in it, even Reedley that is on the west side. So CID gave up their portion of Reedley so that we could continue to have that portion in our GSA, thankfully, right? So we did hold the meeting of the three mayors to appoint the nominee that'll serve as, a first board member. It's a four-year term. And so they did accept Mary Fast as our board member. So, Ms. Fast, you will be the first board member of the GSA. They will be in contact with us to schedule the actual board meeting. And what they need to do, they did the cities first, and now they're moving on to the irrigation districts who have to select a member, and then public utility districts. We made it very easy for them, I think. So hopefully we're a good model for them to follow to a point. But we will keep you posted, and this is all very exciting. Our GSA is ahead of every other GSA out there that had to be created. So we're really excited about where we are in this process. And thus far, while the plan itself to do a sustainability plan for our entire sub-basin will end up costing probably close to $750,000 to $1 million, Reedley's portion will be very small. There is a lot of monitoring, a lot of engineering that goes and is all related to this, but the actual area of land, which is what the fees are based on, is very small for Reedley compared to the rest of the sub-basin. So we don't think that our ratepayers are going to be burdened with a cost, an additional cost at this point. So we'll keep you posted on that as we roll through. I do have news that is a little outside of our jurisdiction, but I thought was very important to share with the council, and that is the High Speed Rail Authority did a brief presentation to the city managers at the COG meeting last Friday morning, and the Highway 180, SR 180, through downtown Fresno, specifically G&H Streets, there will be a realignment of traffic, and so I thought I would share this with you in case you travel through the 180, in case any of our members of the community travel. We'll put this up on our website. Traffic will be shifted to the north side of the freeway for a portion, and then for a portion of time will be traffic will be shifted to the south side, and that's as they build what's called the Fresno Tunnel to make room for the high-speed rail trains that will actually go through a tunnel underneath the 180 freeway. So I do expect for quite a time period that traffic in Fresno is going to be impacted. This is a dramatic traffic shift on these freeways. Mm-hmm. So you're going to be going what's going to feel like the wrong way on a freeway mm-hmm. for a while. So if any of you would like mm-hmm. to see, they do have this really nifty little animated PowerPoint thing that we can send you a link to, and we'll put that up on the website as well. But I just thought it would be important for you to know. We travel up to Fresno quite frequently for things like the COG meetings, meetings with the county, air district meetings, etc. So I thought it would be important. Mm-hmm. Two other things, our general plan litigation with CID got an unexpected call that we're probably looking at a hearing date as early as February rather than May or even later. That's a surprise to us, but it's a good surprise. We need our general plan to be certified by the judge. We need to be able to get development in here, and development is somewhat hindered by, development is hindered by a lot of things right now in this state, but it's particularly hindered in Reedley by the lack of a general plan that's certified. So it will be great to have that hearing in February, and I will keep you posted if that changes. Lastly, I want to point out that we do need a vote from council on going dark November 22nd. We had talked about this previously, that we tend to go dark the last meeting in November because it is the same week of Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. And so if I could just have a quick vote, Mayor, on going dark November 22nd.
Okay. What's the council wishes on it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does that sound okay? Consensus?
Thank you very much, Mayor. All right. Thank you very much. Any staff reports?
Good evening again, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. Just wanted to give you a quick update. Councilwoman Fast talked about, you know, Reedley, a lot of big things or things happening in Reedley, big things as far as the police department is concerned. I do have a good, great piece of news that your police department, City of Reedley, has been invited to participate in a summit in Virginia this weekend. And we are one of 10 across the United States that have been invited to participate in this because of our work with our restorative justice program. So we are getting some really great national acknowledgement. We will be meeting with other members, these other nine other departments throughout the United States to discuss our successes, our challenges when it comes to restorative justice, and hopefully be able to develop a blueprint that we can provide to other communities to start using, to start putting in the place some restorative justice practices. So we are one of two cities from California. City of Davis will also be joining us there. And I got to say that City of Davis just recently got started, but they had invited us several months ago to join them to help them get started. So, this is very exciting for what we're doing. We will be meeting with what they consider the grandfather of restorative justice, Howard Zurr. This gentleman has been, you know, many countries, has been around the world and just practice. He is, again, the grandfather when it comes to restorative justice. So this is going to be a great opportunity for us to interact with these other folks. And I have been asked to facilitate one of the meetings or one of the sessions of this summit. So this will be a great opportunity for me also to interact with other agencies from across the United States. So I just look forward to coming back and reporting back to City Council at our next meeting as far as what's happened. And John, I know we've sent out a press release, so you do have all that information as well as far as what this is all about. But I just wanted to let the City Council know that it's just some great news and just really highlights what we've been doing in Reedley.
Great.
Good deal. Wow,
that's great.
Thank you.
Any other staff with any comments? The mayor, I believe we're done.
Okay. No more items tonight, but wish everybody and your family a great Thanksgiving, right? In case we don't see you, that'd be great. So I'd like to adjourn the meeting tonight and have a nice week. Bye.
Not yet, but she went to the Bahamas.
They're still.